Okay, welcome back. Hour number two. We are going to talk to a couple of people this hour who are involved in heavily the chemtrail, geoengineering, and HAARP issues that so many of us read about in the alternative media on the internet and off of the internet as well. It is a word that everybody who cares now about the planet has heard, HAARP. They can't necessarily define it. They probably know more about chemtrails in terms of the masses of people who pay attention to what's going on around them and occasionally even look up. Billy Hayes is with us tonight. He is formerly CIA, whatever that really means. Apparently a man who has a great deal of information on the HAARP facility in Alaska and perhaps other locations as well. He worked on it, as did his father, apparently. We're going to find out about that. And our author of the book, Chemtrails, HAARP, and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth, is Ilana Freeland. And they're both standing by, I believe, right now. Are you there, Ilana? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
We got you. Thank you. Thanks for being here tonight on short notice. We appreciate that. And Billy, are you there?
Affirmative.
Spoken like a true diplomat. All right. Now, let's start. Let me start with Ilana because her book is out. And if you look under her name, you'll see that. And you can click on it and you can go right to Amazon.com and read about the book, Chemtrails, HAARP, and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth, out this last June 2014. What's in the book, Ilana, and why did you do it?
Well, the book is the go-to manual, in a way, about how chemtrails and HAARP work together. And when I say HAARP, I don't just mean the Gakona, Alaska facility. I also mean that it's the entire network, which is now global, of many, many devices that are taking advantage of tapping into the ionosphere, which is, of course, what ionosphere heaters do. It's been something that the military has doggedly pursued for over half a century, the idea of using Tesla equipment to tap into the unlimited energy of the ionosphere for weapons purposes. And that's what I tried to do in the book, is look at weather warfare for sure, and then look at... Are you there?
Right here.
Oh, yeah. I just suddenly saw something happen on my screen. The weather warfare is only one of the seven agendas that the American military has, and certainly other countries have this technology as well. At least Russia certainly does, and possibly China and India, and it's spreading globally now, and it's certainly going to redefine how we think of international relations and definitely warfare.
Okay, this is a big story. Now, you said something that I've been suggesting for years, although I think you probably know more directly about it than I do. That is the fact that, and we'll hear from Billy about this in just a minute, that the HAARP and HAARP-like facilities have proliferated literally all over the globe. Different governments are using them. The ionosphere by itself is not necessarily, and I want to ask this of Billy. Billy, first, welcome to the program again. Thanks for being here. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I had on mute.
Okay. I've been put on mute before in my life. Okay. The Air Force, first of all, recently said that they were finished with HAARP and they were going to dismantle it because no institution, university, no academic institution wanted to take it over. Nobody bought that I know. This is a technology, obviously, that like when Robert Gates said that remote viewing didn't work and they were dismantling Operation Stargate. I mean, it's the same kind of thing. That was my reaction to it. When you heard that statement, how did you feel?
Oh, it was known clear back in 2010 that what the situation was. They had been forecasting a buildup and modification of the HAARP sites back in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
2011, they turned around and started changing out tubes and tuning cavities and antenna systems and everything, and finished that up in 2012. Then they had a program come up of talking about taking down the space fence. And at the same token, they started talking about taking down the HARP sites because of financial problems, and then they said it was because of health problems and problems with the environment. It just went on and on. They gave excuse after excuse after excuse all the way into 2013.
Uh-huh.
And in 2013, they awarded a partial contract with Raytheon to do new modifications of change of frequencies.
And this is at Gakona?
That was good. All sites. Well, I've worked on 250 different sites for the HARP sites. Some of them were affiliated HARP sites. Some were receivers, some were control stations, some were recording stations, some of them were data monitoring systems. It's a vast, vast system, which is international. It's not just the U.S.
Who's ultimately in charge of this, and who hired Billy Hayes to work on 250 or thereabout HARP-like facilities around the globe?
Well, what they did was embed me with other companies that they contract with to oversee certain things, investigate certain people that were involved with these systems to make sure there was information not being passed outside.
Okay.
And these were legit companies. That's the way the government works. You know, they kind of push everything into a fog of mystery where nobody knows what's going on.
Of course not. They're very good at that. Now, you have a background, and we don't have a lot of time, but why don't you give our listeners just a little quick overview, a summary of your background, because it obviously is extensive. I'm hearing the three-letter acronym for Central Intelligence Agency rumbling around somewhere there. Involved with them, Billy, and I don't expect you to answer if you can't, but can you?
I can't answer that.
Okay, thank you.
I was involved with the contracting with the government into a three-letter organization.
Fine, that's close enough. All right. Now, when and why did you become involved with HARP or a HARP-like facility?
Well, I started out in 1962.
Way back. Okay.
Oh, yeah. My father was involved with Gerald Bull, who was the man of the super gun, and they were working with electronics in recording data.
This is very interesting because Gerald Bull and the super gun is a story that nobody knows about, and it's a fascinating, it's a major motion picture story, in my view. I mean, he was murdered. I've forgotten which government, Middle Eastern government, had hired him to build a super gun for them, which would allow them to fire projectiles over long, long distances. It was an extraordinary scientific and really a brilliant achievement.
Yeah, it was a rock. Gerald Bull was head of HARP. That was the first HARP, the little HARP.
Yeah.
HARP was the program he was affiliated with.
Huh.
And my father was affiliated with it. And they set up a system out on the Aleutian Islands. They started out, you know, down in the Bahamas and down in the Pacific area with their first testings. And they moved the testing up to the Aleutian Islands off the Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1963, they did their firings there, and it just so happens it was the same exact day that the earthquake happened in Alaska.
Are you necessarily tying those two together?
Yep, sure do.
What did your father say about that?
He was out on Illusions himself. They were setting up a SATCOM station there, early version of the SATCOM station, mm-hmm. And part of the Dew Line. And he was at Cape Lisbourne doing the monitoring. And things went awry with the communications when they fired this atomic charge some 74 miles into the atmosphere.
Why were they firing? Wait a minute. Why were they firing an atomic weapon up in the atmosphere? What was the point of that? And how did they get it up 74 miles?
That was the big gun. That was the big gun. That was
so Bull's gun could fire vertically or nearly vertically get something up that we don't want it straight up, but
it was the gun was aimed at 84 degrees.
Fascinating. That's a very interesting story. If you folks do a little search on the internet, super gun, I think you'll be intrigued with what you find, for sure. Let me go back to Ilana here for a minute or two. How did you meet Mr. Hayes, Ilana?
Well, I was on, I think, really, wasn't it? I was on Coast to Coast in May. Richard Syrett was filling in, and I had been on Richard's conspiracy show from Canada three times.
Uh-huh.
And Richard invited me on to Coast to Coast, so I spent 3 hours on there. And then after, I had over 200 email friend requests, and I think Billy contacted me through that. Wasn't that it, Billy?
Yep.
Yeah, and he was very complimentary to me about the show, and I had Farrell House that published the book send him a copy, and it's we've been going ever since.
That's a good publishing house. I like those people. They have a very eclectic catalog.
Well, it was really Adam Parfrey's idea to ask me if I could write a book on chemtrails. He's mm-hmm. the one that started mm-hmm. it all. Up till then, I had just done some research on it for other things I was writing.
Okay. All right. Let me pull back here, and let's look at the bigger picture for a few minutes. The Air Force announced, I don't know how long it was now ago, 15 years, 12 years, that they were going to own the weather by 2025. In my view, that's one of those things, well, we've already done it, but we're going to pretend like we haven't, so don't think too much about it. Is this a done deal, Billy Hayes? Does the military-industrial complex really control the weather to a majority of its potential?
Absolutely. They've been doing things that it's very modest what they do, because it's in line with the natural occasion of what's happening. They just make it happen when they want it to happen, and they're able to push certain fronts to block other fronts and re-engage mostly when you're talking about weather. It's moving the jet stream to where they want it to happen.
Right. And this is primarily done with multiple HAARP-like facilities?
Exactly. Multiple HAARP frequencies.
And facilities.
And we've got to learn to do this. It isn't the matter of the frequency that they use. When we're talking about frequency, we're talking about them bouncing off the ionosphere. Mm-hmm. No longer is new HAARP, and I state this, the new HAARP does not utilize the same low frequencies that were used before, because it is not the total interest of the ionosphere. Now it is utilizing objects that they have put into the atmosphere and into space.
Low Earth orbit.
Right.
Okay, so these are reflecting bodies up there, energetically speaking, and that's what they use to turn. They mirror. It's not like a mirror.
It's an atmosphere. It's an additional additive to the atmospheres.
Okay. Now, I watched go ahead.
We are talking chemtrails, too.
Yeah, we're going to get there. I watched last winter a big high-pressure system sitting off the coast of California, about 1,000 miles out, and I watched storm after storm all winter long come roaring out of the Kamchatka, Korea area across the North Pacific, and then it would run into this high pressure, and I'm sure you're well aware of what happened to it. I won't go into it. But that
we call it the Arctic Vortex.
Okay. That's what really led to the drought in California. Now, in back of some of these storms and above them, and there was a video I posted recently by a fellow who's been watching these weather satellite videos of a storm on the 23rd, 24th, and 25th of September that was just destroyed off the coast of Washington. Beautiful vortex in the center of it was just, they call it downbursting. It was messed up. Now, to the north of this whirling storm that was turned into just a big blob of moisture were a number of chemtrail spray lines. Now, Ilana, let me ask you to give us an overview in your experience, in your view, of how chemtrail spraying works with HAARP to control storm systems and storm fronts.
Well, it's interesting that you just talked about California, because I was just down there doing a book tour, and when I came to Mount Shasta, which of course is Dane Wigington's territory,
yeah,
and Francis Mangles was there as well, I did go into trying to give people a good mental picture of just how this Navy experimentation off the coast of California, weather modification experiments, are working. And if I could read that straight from the speech, I think people would have a picture of how this works.
Yeah, go ahead.
High over our heads, military and or commercial jets lay the nano-sized light metal chaff that remains suspended while the heavier metals drop slowly by firing radio frequency into this chemically enhanced, statically charged curtain of chaff. A dense wall is created. Radio and radar, masers and lasers aligned on shore, offshore, on ships and aircraft, now lay a conductive waveguide for funneling the moisture coming off the South Pacific and steering it north beyond California so it can be folded into the jet stream over Vancouver Island, which will then dip and head east, taking California's moisture with it to the Midwest or the Southern states, or, as occurred at the time I was in the Southwest, dump a flood just outside Phoenix, Arizona. I mean, you see how you need that curtain of chaff, of highly conductive metals, in order to trigger a tremendous volatility that can then be steered. As long as you've got the heating implements, whether it's lasers or masers or whatever, to trigger it. And then you can move that weather as you see fit. Billy, what would you add to that?
Okay, now, we have to understand this. It isn't just the frequency of one unit. We're talking about utilizing each one of these units, laser masers, radar, all of them participate in a dance of manipulating this weather. It isn't just one thing. For instance, NAXRAD is part of the system now, too. The whole system now is a digitized system that is now part of the new space fence. The U.S. Air Force new space fence is in reality the new HAARP. But it's far, far, far more than just this system. This is a total communication system, worldwide digital communication system of the governments of the world, that provides surveillance of everything that moves on this earth. Anything that's got a digital number on it that moves can be tracked, including anything below the earth itself.
Tomography, yeah, okay. Yeah. Ground-penetrating tomography, or radar, Can go down. I don't know how deep it can penetrate now, but it's able to go down quite a ways and see a lot of different things. So there are no secrets. You can't really go under to hide out anymore.
Right. This also includes the new systems that are being utilized. So you've heard of LRAD.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. It is part of the system, too. It is a digitized signal that goes out that can penetrate and create an oscillation to produce effects of either sound, pain, burning, microwave. It can do all these. This is part of the system, too. Yeah. And this is all on a computer system. They manipulate each one of these systems within nanoseconds of each other, so they react with each other and perform a musical dance of weaponry.
Where is this centered now? Where's the CNC of this? I don't want an exact location, but just generally speaking, where is it? Do you know?
Oh, heavens, yes. Everybody knows. The president was just there before he made the announcement of what we're going to do over in Iraq.
He actually figured something out?
Well, let's not go there.
All right.
That's politics. I don't do politics.
Yeah. Okay.
MacDill Air Force Base.
It's still at MacDill. Okay.
All right. That is command center for all electronic influences. Military-wise, worldwide.
You mentioned... go ahead, Billy. Go ahead.
It's part of the Patriot missile system. It's part of the tracking system of all communications, which includes cellular systems.
You're talking about some amazing integration here of extraordinarily powerful and elaborate, sophisticated computer systems.
Absolutely. That's what the new world is. That's the new system. It is a magic of disbelief of what they're doing. I mean, it's so fantastic. All communications, that includes all cellular communications, goes through this system.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I believe it. All right, hold on. Billy, hold on, please. We have to take a break here just for a couple minutes. Alana will be right back as well. Stay tuned. More to come. Okay, let's get back to our conversation. How far along has the chemtrail program so far gone? And how much further will it go, Ilana? What are they going to do with this? Is it now endemic to the planet? Will it constantly be used? Or will they get to a point where, like most technologies, it's replaced by something else? It's doing a lot of damage. We all know that. We've known that for a long time.
Well, let's keep that idea of the space fence that Billy has built. The idea that a huge connective web of communications has been built, and what that really means is that we are now breathing an ionized atmosphere, and that I simplify it for people by saying it's electric. It's electrified. It's like when people complained of the heat this summer. It's as if I'm being microwaved, a woman said. And in a way, that's exactly what's happening, because in our bodies are these conductive metals. We're breathing them every day.
Right.
Where? Around the Earth, around the earth. I mean, my book concentrates on NATO countries because I could document that. But, you know, the atmosphere is one, and it's drifting, just like the Fukushima radiation. It's all drifting, and it's one, and we're breathing it. So those conductive metals are in our blood. They're in our tissues. They're in our cells. They're in fetuses. That's the first thing. This conductive material is plugging us in to this huge nervous system that has been constructed for military purposes. Now, as you know, Jeff, because you had Clifford on the show, there are little, I call them hybrids, that are biologicals, and they're being piggybacked on the Mylar polymers that are coming down with the heavy metals in the chemtrails. And we're breathing those in as well, and they're lodging in our systems. And they are loaded with sensors and microprocessors on a nano scale. And so in a sense, we really are plugged in to this huge...
What part of the matrix? Because we're little... Each of us is a sender-receiver, whether we want to be or not, apparently.
Exactly. And that's, to me, where we're headed. And it all has to do, ultimately, with a transhumanist future. And that is the next book I'm going to write, the sequel to this, because in this book, it's sort of, like I said, it's the go-to for the simple answers of the seven agendas that have been on the front burner of the military-industrial complex. But this is going much further, and Billy has given you a picture, a taste of where they're taking this with the space fence.
Billy, two things. One, what did you've been to Gakona, just for openers. Most people think of HAARP as one location, unfortunately, but we've tried to tell them on this program that that's not the case. What did you do up there exactly? What was your mission?
We were installing the antennas, the riggings, the balums, the match systems. We did the tune-ups, the connection of all the feed lines, the setups to the transmitters. We did all the hookups for all the transmitter buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we built the HAARP.
Is there any truth to the story that there's a much larger HAARP facility, rather adjacent to the one that we know about in Gakona?
Well, if you want to call Rush adjacent, but yeah, it's on the same parallel. The original Woodpecker system is not gone.
Well, that's in Russia. That's an OTH radar.
It's no longer a matter of power. The amount of power they put out. It's amount of coverage now.
Uh-huh.
And now, by the new digitized system, every SATCOM site, every DO site, every SPX system, mm-hmm. floating radar system out there that's on the new digital system, mm-hmm. is part of this. And it's a fact of combining their signals in a way to create a directive power to certain areas where they can offload these frequencies to make up a funneling effect of frequencies.
Yeah, it's right. pretty obvious that in time, and maybe not that much time, they will be able to do almost anything one can conceive of with power. With electronics, look how dangerous Wi-Fi is, and Google is talking about Wi-Fi-ing the entire planet. I think it was 65 or 70 satellites that they have now planned to put in orbit to Wi-Fi the entire planet. How much more can the human physiology take before it just starts to disintegrate? That's the ultimate question to me.
Okay, well, you have to understand the basic principles of the original HAARP. It was a powerhouse to create a plasmatic effect on the ionosphere.
Right.
No longer is that needed, because now we can statically charge and ionize these particles that are in the air now, these metallic particles, these light floating particles.
Yeah, they're floating up there permanently.
Right. Not just in our atmosphere. Now, every rocket that goes up releases the same thing that's in chemtrails. Every rocket that's fired, whether it be for the ISS.
What do you mean? They lace the fuel with this stuff?
Absolutely.
So when it burns,
all your solid rockets burn a thermite type fuel. And that thermite is made up of aluminum oxides and barium and lithium, a whole mass of many particles.
Yes, they can put almost anything they want if they do it at the nano level.
Well, the idea is to put it into orbit now.
It up, and it's above the ionosphere.
Exactly. This is the band. They destroyed the ionosphere. You understand? They punched so many holes in the ionosphere that it's no longer feasible for protection. That they have ballooned it out so many times and weakened it so much that it is in distress.
With heart.
Right. Exactly.
Billy, make sure you tell him what the metals are being taken up there for.
Yeah, Billy, do that. Will you hold on, please? We have to take our last break here, just 3 minutes. We'll come right back. Yeah, what are the metals being taken up there for? This is apparently above the ionosphere in low Earth orbit, where all that space junk is, among other things. It's a busy place up there. All right, hold on. We'll be right back. Okay, and we're back. All right, Billy Hayes, go ahead there.
Okay, well, no longer is that needed, all that power. Mm-hmm. Now they have systematically devised ways to energize our atmosphere and ionize it so it maintains a supercharge of just a supercapacitor that surrounds our atmosphere from the particles that are in there. As the particles are moved with weather and everything, those particles move through the magnetosphere and the magnetic flux lines of the Earth. This creates a supercharge that it ionizes. It's basically speaking, they're making a super amplifier above us all the time. One of the toolings are, you grab this, wind farms with these fiberglass blades. As they churn through the air, they all now churn at the same rate. They are all timed, so each blade passes the supporting pendulum at the same time, discharging the two blades that are in the air. So you get this pulse, this pulse. It's 3 to 7 hertz.
It's a harmonic pulse. Okay.
And it charges, it pulses not only the atmosphere above, but it pulses the Earth below.
Well, that's close to the Schumann resonance.
Exactamundo. This creates energy within the Earth itself through all the crystalline and metal masses that are in the Earth. It creates a energy there. Also, in doing so, it charges the atmosphere. And this is where you've heard of sprites. Well, now we're cultivating sprites. NASA is into this form of energizing sprites. They're no longer just watching sprites. They're farming sprites, because with every sprite discharge, there is a particle or two of antimatter.
So when listeners hear that, Billy, they should think of the lightning that has no thunder with it for the sprites.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, so what we have to look at, I guess, in an overall view is how much more, and I go back to my question, how much more can life itself, living forms of life on this planet, take? We are really coming close to our maximum potential to absorb this stuff, aren't we?
But I think what they're hoping for, and what they're certainly taking what I call Nazi notes and records on, is who can make it and who can't. Who can evolve? Can human beings evolve? This is what that whole word enhancement means. The singularity and the transhumanist speeches of Ray Kurzweil, etc. They talk about enhancing the human being. The military talks about enhancing soldiers. What they really mean is, can the human body evolve into a different form with this kind of atmosphere and this kind of environment that now is not only outside of us, it's inside of us? That's what their question is, I believe.
And everything comes down to the fact that they're chasing the tetra wave. The tetra wave is so small, it can manipulate the finite components of the atom itself. It's so finite, it can establish control of DNA. And in doing this, the pursuant is to modify life form itself. And just today, there is a release of the new Wi-Fi system that will be coming out shortly of 60 gigahertz. That will be available for everybody.
Wow, they're getting up there.
Yeah, 60 gigahertz. You understand? The higher the frequency, the smaller the wavelengths. And when they get the wavelength down to where it is small enough to manipulate each individual particle, then they have full control of the universe.
Well, the known universe, anyway. Our universe. This planet. I wouldn't think that we could reach out much beyond the planet.
I have to be forgiven to say just the opposite.
Yeah, I beg to differ too.
Whatever we've been doing on this earth has gone well beyond this earth.
Don't get me wrong. I understand what you're saying, but I don't think that we have the ability here to manipulate the solar system in terms of its physical status, perhaps subtle energy, perhaps electromagnetics, but on a very weak level.
I agree on that. We don't have that sort of power. We can't outdo the sun. Not possible.
Billy, I got to get to the punchline here. Where is this going? It almost sounds brilliantly mired in chaos. There's too much. Yes, it's all glued together, and it seems to, as you say, it's all interactive. But where is it going? What are they doing? They've already got the public so cowed and mind-controlled, it's not funny. So what more is there?
I don't know. I don't know how far you can go. Just look what's happening in the world. I mean, they're taking our minds and jamming it up so bad. I mean, look what's happening in Iraq and the police and.
There's trouble
everywhere. Matter.
Yeah,
we live in a world of chaos, confusion, and most of the simplified people are already on that verge of we got to prepare. They don't know what they're preparing for, but we got to prepare.
Well, there are any number of scenarios coming their way that they can use as justification, but unfortunately, not many more than 1% or 2% of the population, maybe even not 1%, truly prepare.
It won't be able to fight against us unless people come together, not just raising banners and screaming at each other on the street and protesting. It has to be, we have to come up with people who have scientific knowledge, who can take the facts that we have been trying to feed for the last 15, 20 years out there, put it together, and make some sense of where we can fight this unit.
Right.
Right. And when it comes to electronics, you can anything you do in electronics, someone can undo it.
Anything you can do, somebody can undo.
Right.
Well, I'm not going to argue that at all. Okay, let's go back to Ilana. We just have a couple minutes left. What would you like to put on the table here? We haven't gotten there yet.
Well, for me, I mean, I'm constantly asked by people, what can I do? What can I do? This, we're helpless.
All this geoengineering is just nonstop now.
Right. I mean, to me, I feel thrilled to live in an era like this where there's a good fight, because I'm basically a warrior type. And my way of fighting is through public knowledge and my writing, my speaking. And I really, it's like Billy said, we need a knowledge basis. We need, instead of emotion and feeling and fear, we need to take hold of this, not wait for the experts, not wait for the authority figures to tell us how we can save ourselves. We need to all dig in. And I'm very impressed with the so-called chemtrail activist movement. I'm in touch with a lot of these people, uh-huh. and their ability to observe and analyze is phenomenal. These are common people. These are not the scientific experts who seem to be enthralled.
Well, they're citizen scientists is what they are.
Say it again?
Citizen scientists, in a way.
Yes, they are. And I have great confidence in that. As I said to a group down in California, when they said, what can we do? I said, if we develop a knowledge base in our communities and really lay hold of this, we don't know what we'll be able to do. That's what we need to do next. Europe is way ahead of us on that. And we are so far behind because we are corporate media owned here. And this is, I'm feeling a big breakthrough here, Jeff. And I'm going to push with it. And so is Billy. We're both pushing on this.
Well, I hope so. We don't have much time left.
Well, I don't know that.
It's going to take cooperation. Instead of people bickering on who's right and who's wrong, people, everything that's out there that is the truth can come together, and it will match. It will match if it's the truth. And from that truth and the true facts out of it, we can come up with a conclusion on how to deal with these things instead of all these people running out there starting to fight over things. And oh man,
that's what the controllers do. They go on the internet into the alternative world of news and information, and they start fights, and they use libel and defamation and character assassination and disinformation. And it's just, they must be laughing, a lot of them. Because they can create a lot of trouble very easily. We have to sort it out.
But it's like what Billy was saying. These are frequencies. We're talking frequencies. We're talking pulses. We're talking vibration. Consciousness is a vibration. Consciousness is a frequency. And I maintain that consciousness is something that humanity has to tap into more and more. And this may be exactly why we're being pushed to the wall.
Well, we are indeed. Thank you, Ilana and Billy, for being here. There's obviously a lot going on, and I don't know what I can do except try to present logic and reason in the face of so much noise out there. It's amazing what a mess this place is. But we can clean it up. We've got to start one person at a time, though. Has to begin within.
Well, thank you.
All right, thanks, Billy.
Thanks,
Ilana.
Thank you.
Good night.
Bye.
Okay. Pretty eclectic hour. And we'll be back with more in just a few. Hang on. Joel Skousen joins us and his view on ISIS and world affairs brief. And certainly he'll comment on Ebola as well. So there's a lot ahead. Stay there.